Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about health and nutrition, starting off with a discussion that I didn't have a chance to get to yesterday about sugar and how sugar causes cancer. We're also going to look at processed meats. Well, the new research shows they're as bad as smoking cigarettes, and yet look at all the ads for processed meats. We're consuming more than ever before. I'm going to spend more time today than normal on environmental issues, just to bring you up to date because, once again, California's on fire. Over 250,000 people yesterday lost their electricity, and dozens of homes have burned, and tens of thousands of people are evacuating, and this is around major cities, including Los Angeles. In fact, for the first time that I'm aware of, Bel Air, which is the most exclusive area, had homes burning. And there was just one 6-acre fire, but it's causing massive damage there. And this is in an area that people thought they were protected, immune from any kind of environmental disaster. Not true. Also, today we'll take a look at how 730,000 children, Filipino children, received a faulty vaccine and why that's not making news in the United States. But then I'll be playing right behind that an audio clip of the biggest public health scam. Experts want legal action over risky vaccine program. Also today, most people don't realize what's coming. So we'll play you part of an audio clip from a documentary showing you what's coming. And also, tomorrow, I am going to play our progressive commentary hour from last night because it was one of those programs that just at the one time can depress you by how bad things are, but also it can motivate people who say, okay, it's just information. What can I do to get out of harm's way? So it's a wake-up call, and I'll play you a part of human extinction within the next 12 years. That's what one scientist believes. There are about 13 other scientists who are close to that, and none of them believe that we will have a civilization as we know it in 30 years. But most say it's going to start happening in the next 3 years after the Arctic is completely ice-free. Well, we had an ice-free Arctic this summer, so the clock is ticking. We have forgotten all about Saudi Arabia. Big mistake. There is a play going on in Saudi Arabia that would equal any of the dramatic Machiavellian intrigues in the courts of Europe during the 14th, 15th, 16th centuries. A young 32-year-old crown prince who is going to be the king of Saudi Arabia because his father is, I think, 81, and he's going to abdicate to his son, and saying that he wants to eliminate corruption, he has had mass arrests and confiscated his own relatives' fortunes, including one of the wealthiest men in the world's fortune, and kept them in prison with the idea that because they're at the Ritz-Carlton, it must be nice. It's not, because from other reports, American special operatives have gone in to lead the interrogations. So that's not going to be a pleasant experience. But what's his end goal? Is it personal power? Destroy his opponents and confiscate their massive wealth? We're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars collectively. And what is he? Well, he is the architect of the largest genocide going on in the world today. 500,000 cases of cholera, that's him. 9 million people starving to death, that's him. Destroying every church or mosque and hospitals, schools, water purification plants, all civilian infrastructure, that's him. all abated by the United States, because we're the ones providing him with the intelligence, the satellites, boots on the ground, and all the military equipment and arms to do it. So that means we, the United States, are guilty at this moment of crimes against humanity and a violation of international treaties. Not a word anywhere in the media. So we'll give you a little update on that as well. That's our program today, and if time permits, I'll certainly open it up for feedback. Let's begin. There's a really good report from Sayer G. of GreenMedInfo, and boy, could I have used this 35 years ago. I was debating Dr. Elizabeth Whalen, who at that time was the head of the American Council on Science and Health. She had been at Harvard under Dr. Frederick Stair. Stair was known to those of us in the health field as the cornflakes professor because he was the biggest champion, always before congressional hearings, about how the American diet was not a bad diet, how sugar was not a bad nutrient, though it had no nutrients. And so whenever they wanted someone who had a good background academically, a chairman of a department at Harvard is good credentials to get you in as an expert, the information he gave, in my personal opinion, was the most destructive and damaging a human being could have given, because it, in effect, it allowed people to believe that as long as you had everything in moderation, that was fine. Well, a moderate amount of a toxin is still toxic. If you went into your doctor's office and the doctor said, I'm going to give you a moderate amount of radiation, why? No particular reason. You're here. Why not? I can bill it, and it's a moderate amount. You think, well, okay, or no, it's not okay. Depends upon your level of awareness. And there was that debate that Barry Farber was going to host on WMCA. The year was 1975 and or 6. And it was between myself and Frederick Stair. He'd agreed to it, and we were all prepared. And the noon time came, and the show was about to begin, and Stair didn't show up. He was no show. He couldn't be bothered. He was playing tennis. That's where we got. But I went ahead and did the discussion about all the things that he supported and showed why these were all wrong. So then I got a call from Bob Kane at NBC, and he said, would you like to come on and debate Elizabeth Whalen of the American Council on Science and Health? And I said, sure. Now, you have a right in the United States, and I'm glad we have this right, a freedom of speech. You can be wrong in your speech, you can be outrageous in your speech, but at least you have that right. And we have the right to disagree or agree. And so on that day, I knew that she'd be using the fact that she was an alumni from Harvard and she headed this group. And that gave her somehow a leg up on being right. And I've seen this played out so many times in my career, that if a person is an MD, they are supposed to be the ultimate authority. If they come from an Ivy League university, then they're unquestionable. They have to be accurate. Well, what does that mean for everyone who's not like them? You're automatically, before it, the first word is discussed, you're already on the defensive, and you're already perceived of as an interloping fool. And I remember debating Elizabeth Whalen that day on sugar. And I had all my studies. I could connect the peer review literature with sugar and heart disease, sugar and cancer, sugar and diabetes, sugar and obesity, sugar and tooth decay, and sugar and the disruption of healthy bacteria in the intestines. I had about 120 good studies. So she was talking about how good sugar was and it wasn't that harmful. And so we had our debate. Okay. I remember at the elevator, I said, would you like to have these studies since you were not aware of them? And no. That was the last ever, you know, heard of her. And she went on to represent the special interest. The American Council on Science and Health is noted for its views and its efforts on behalf of major corporate interest. That's fine. Nothing illegal about that. They can do the best they can for those groups. But we, meaning those who represent the people, there is no foundation, there is no think tank, there are no grants, there's no money. And you're always perceived as being wrong until you prove yourself right. Goes against American jurisprudence, goes against logic. So today, we have a lot of good information, but we do not have any input on the mainstream media. So we're using the internet, we're using alternative media to share our messages. There was a time when very few people were interested in anything alternative. Today, it is the majority of people. That doesn't mean that they actualize it, but it does mean that they are aware of how misleading, how much false information, fake news, comes from the mainstream. So we're happy to have a Green Med Info that shares quality information, peer review. So when you look at the average American consuming their body weight annually in this cancer-causing substance, and yet hospitals freely feed it to their cancer patients. That is simply so wrong. I'm a registered dietitian, as well as having an undergraduate degree in nutrition and a PhD in nutrition and a lot of other scientific research to back all that up, a research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology, professor, and having done an awful lot of original research and published the results. But none of that makes a difference when it comes to trying to influence the garbage that hospitals feed people. And it's garbage. It is the most unhealthy, disease-causing food imaginable. So here is the logic. You go into a hospital. You are not malnourished, but eating hospital food given by a registered dietitian that is then overseen by the doctor. The doctor tells the dietitian what the diet should be. The dietitian is responsible for creating it. 50,000 Americans died in 1 year from malnutrition they had from going into a hospital. Or put another way, in one single year, 80% as many Americans died of malnutrition in a hospital as died in the entire 10 years of the Vietnam War. A little different perspective, and yet not a single word about it anywhere. We were the first to break that story on our show. So the last thing you should do is eat anything in a hospital. You get more nutrition licking a curb at 42nd and 8th Avenue. Hospital food feed cancer patients sugar and high carbohydrate diets for a reason. They're abysmally ignorant of the role of nutrition, health, and disease. I do not believe anyone's doing anything intentionally to harm people, but the results of being stupid is you're going to harm yourself and other people. Hence the burgeoning growth in packed rooms. And even though the science itself shows, at least since the mid-1920s, with Otto Warburg's cancer hypothesis, that tumors prefer to utilize sugar fermentation to produce energy rather than the much more efficient oxygen-based quality of energy, hospitals have actually invited corporations like McDonald's to move into their facilities to so-called enhance their patients' appetite experience, presumably to prove that we're giving our patients comfort foods, and that takes the edge off the painful surgery and radiation and chemotherapy treatments erroneously proffered to them as the only reasonable standard of care. So let's just pull back far enough. Detach from the mind-numbing stupidity of it all. Our entire medical industrial complex is stupid. The physicians are intentionally ignorant or complicit for their own economic or professional or career gains. Because the very food that the scientific literature proves, unequivocally proves, causes cancer is what is fed to them when they have cancer. And then the treatments that have been proven to cause cancer, chemotherapy and radiation, are the majority of the treatments given to a person with cancer. And then once they're in recovery from a treatment that causes cancer, from having eaten foods that cause cancer, they're then given cancer-causing foods. Does any of that make sense? Can you see how mind-numbingly stupid the entire medical industrial complex, all the politicians, the entire media, all of the scientific community, all the teachers, all of the students, everybody has got their head up their ass when it comes to anything representing common sense and reason. We are a nation that is dumbed down to a degree or been complicit in our own compromising of intellect that we refuse to see the truth about anything. They'll throw in ideological referencing, throw in political referencing, throw in cultural referencing, religious referencing, and it's a wonder anybody can actually learn to breathe when they wake up in the morning. We are completely screwed. Do you understand what I'm saying? And so I go back to that debate. The truth existed before that debate. And it'll exist in the future, but no one's going to pay attention to it because they cannot afford to. And then you ask, what cost would you pay? Would it be a political cost? I don't want to be excluded. I never will forget. At that time, and for years before, a very close friend, one of the top Democratic liberal donors in America, certainly the top in New York City, said to me, all the people that you see here, Gary, yeah, they all know how corrupt the Clintons are. They're not stupid. But they also know by giving them money, giving them access, bundling for them, meaning raising money, they will be able to be rewarded 100 times over. The rule of 100. Now, I'd never heard that before. And this person said, it's called the rule of 100. You give someone a dollar, they'll give you back 100. If you side with them, even when they're wrong, and especially if they're wrong. And that's why today you have such a completely corrupt liberal democratic establishment, as you had historically with the Republican conservative establishment. That does not mean, however, that they're not ethical and conscious liberals or ethical and conscious conservatives. There are, but their party has been compromised and corrupted. So if you want to be rewarded, you have to accept that the corruption is okay because you don't want the cost of being excluded. Your corporation could be excluded. Your no-bid contract awards could be excluded. Your positioning to be a technocrat or an advisor for a period of time, heading one of the, like the FDA, would be excluded. In effect, you'd have to be doing it on your own. Now you have a whole army of completely compromised sycophants doing it together. And that's how everything in America works. Through every institution, there's not an institution you can name in the United States that's been compromised by these same principles. And then you just have the jerk factor. People who wake up in the morning and they intend to be a jerk because that's all they know how to be. They are bottom feeders intellectually, spiritually, emotionally, morally. And so they hang out in the rooms of the Pacifica Foundation, local station board, you want to see dysfunction at a level you can't imagine. They actually inbreed there. So here's where we're at. If you want to be healthy and happy, if you want to be out of harm's way, you better learn that the entire establishment has compromised against you. And it pretends to be your friend and pretends to be expert, pretends to know what they're talking about. We don't have any of these wise men and women in America anymore. I used to think we did. We don't. We have individuals, but there's no collective group of them anywhere. That's another one of our utopian myths, one of those New Age nonsense that if you wrap yourself in enough of the, you know, Deepak nonsense and the Tony Robbins nonsense and Wayne Dyer nonsense, somehow you're going to throw good energy out and it's all going to come back. No, the only thing that's going to come back is everyday cause and effect. That's the reality of life, and there's nothing more spiritually or metaphorically that's going to take that place. What you do, you get back in measure. So if you go on a bad diet, you're going to end up with disease. You go on, you vote for the wrong people, you're going to end up with the wrong politicians, and it's the wrong policies and the wrong laws and the wrong overtures. You end up, you vote for the right people, and if they're in power, more often than not, you'll see positive outcome. Eat a good diet, more often than not, you see positive outcome. So it's cause and effect. It is just that basic. Or as I mentioned last night to my guest, it is not the solution that we need to any problem before we are able to examine, understand, and ask about the real problem. So we're seeking solutions without being honest about the problem. So here's an issue. How likely are you to find the right solution if you are on the wrong problem? And so we live in denial of our complicity in the cause of our problems, but then are angry or act like victims if we don't have the solution given to us by someone else, rarely seeking it ourselves. So when you have a McDonald's selling you food in a hospital where cancer patients are, that is the irony of ironies. And yet the doctors, the nurses, the administrators, the secretaries, the janitor, no one questions that nonsense. We should close down every hospital in the United States and start from scratch and open up new ones. And just, if people don't want to learn about real healing, they shouldn't be doctors or nurses. And all healthcare should be free. But we're not going to go that step, so we're going to have to look at what we're dealing with. So just remember, trust in the people who say that they are the experts and ask a simple question. Sir, you have received unlimited amounts of money, trillions of dollars collectively. You are never questioned on what you do. You're allowed to publish anything. If you want to write your name backwards, you get it in the New England Journal of Medicine. The entire medical industrial complex is completely corrupted from top to bottom. There are no smart people left in that damn institution. And yet they pretend to be something they're not. Now, can you show me actual patients that are cured today after 45 years of official war on cancer with no limitations and all the effort and 100% control? Show me the people to show me the results of your controlling an industry. Show me the 5-year survival of terminally ill patients. You'd be sitting in an empty room for the next decade then. Do you get it yet? We reward everyone in America, everyone, no matter how high or low they are on the spectrum of differentiation, for what is perceived as effort, and we never for results. It's the results when it comes to your health that count, not your effort. Because your effort is going to be aligned specifically and clearly with the prevailing acceptable paradigm power view. Stay with the paradigm. If every patient dies, you'll still be rewarded and respected. Try something alternative and cure your cancer patient or heart patient or brain patient, and you'll be punished. Doesn't take you long to figure out which one you're going to align to. So just remember, the research has been there for a long time. Just read the Journal of Clinical Investigation. The title of the article, Increased Sugar Uptake Promotes Oncogenesis via EPAC, RAPI, or 1, and it shows you how sugar in the diet causes cancer. Lots of implications, so just give up the sugar. You do that, you're helping yourself. One other thing you got to give up, if you really want to be healthy, is processed meats. Why? Because all of that meat that you're eating, it's doing the same thing to you that cigarette smoke did, except with different organs. And yet we have all the cold cuts, the bolognese and the salamis and the pastrami's on the pizzas and on the fast food restaurants. The hot dogs, that's your processed meats. Ham, all the things coming from ham. These are a whole long list of carcinogens. And you might as well walk through an asbestos house smelling diesel fume and smoking a cigarette, because the impact on causing cancer is going to be about the same. So red meat, under which all the ARC, including beef, lamb, and pork, were classified as probable carcinogens, and also contains glyphosate, the active ingredient in many weed killers, that's what you're getting. And you want to look at the number one reason for colorectal cancer? Meat. in the diet, and that kills 50,000 people a year. Does that get our attention? Nothing gets our attention except what we want in the moment, and we don't want the truth because that's too harsh to our mindset. Talking about a truth that's harsh, how about this? This is from Health Impact News. Quote, it is a story that is being mostly censored in the United States media. Vaccine manufacturer Sanofi Pasteur has admitted that their vaccine for dengue, which is, by the way, a deadly tropical disease spread mostly by mosquitoes, is defective. In a press release from France, the pharmaceutical company admitted that the vaccine is harmful to those not previously infected with dengue and could cause children not previously infected with dengue fever to contract a severe case of the disease. And this was based upon 6 years of clinical data. So, the takeaway message is this. 730,000 Filipino children have received at least one dose of the dengue vaccine, the vaccine, and that was the first licensed vaccine for the virus. And since the Philippine Department of Health launched the vaccine drive in schools last year, and the newly appointed Philippine Health Secretary, Francisco Duque, immediately instructed the Dengue Technical and Management Committee to meet with an expert panel to determine the next course of action. Quote, the safety of children vaccinated is paramount, and the health department will need to do surveillance. Well, ask someone who's had dengue. Dengue fever can frequently kill you. And by the way, that vaccine was also approved for marketing in 11 other countries, mostly in Asia and Latin America, where dengue is a leading cause of serious illness and death among children. So you could have 750,000 children who had not had dengue now develop dengue from the vaccine. And I actually have an audio clip from the Minister of Health talking about how severe this is, and try to find that information in the American media. We do not allow anything said about vaccines that would make anyone question the safety and efficacy of vaccines. And we should. But we're not. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Null. We're going to take a break. Come right back. Please stay with us. We're going to go to an audio clip now. This is called The Biggest Health Scam. An expert wants legal action over risky vaccine program. Please listen in.
And this is what you called it. You said this is the biggest government-funded clinical trial masked as a public health program scam of an experimental drug in the history of the DOH. Question is, how did that happen? How did it go through the radar and actually see the light of day, Dr. Mercado?
Carmina, as far as I know, there were many scientists, many voices who were not in agreement with doing this immunization program, even within the Department of Health. And I think the records are going to show that even the formulary executive committee that was in charge of oversight, technical oversight, for allowing a new vaccine to be used for public health purposes was not in favor of using this vaccine. So what happened politically and what happened at the senior level of the Department of Health is really unknown to us. But what we do know is that civil society and the scientists did directly give advice, information, and did object to using this vaccine at such a massive scale, even when it had just been announced. So there was time to retract or to not do it if there was an initial mistake. But they went ahead and implemented the immunization program, even without the meeting of the scientific advisory group of the WHO. Mm. So How it progressed, I think this was a very high-level decision. And as far as I can see it, it was a big experiment.
And because of this, you said charges should be filed. And if so, against whom, Dr. Mercado?
Well, I was saying that we should have legal action. Right now, it is not clear to me. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know how to attribute the accountability, but somebody should be accountable for all those children who were vaccinated, who may not have had dengue, could have a severe case of dengue even 10 years from now. Someone needs to be accountable for that. And the mothers, parents need to know that if, you see, the thing is this, Carmina, what WHO said was that there should be high zero prevalence. What does that mean? That you have a lot of children who have already had dengue, and then you can give it. But as far as public knowledge is concerned, there were no tests done to find out what the levels of zero prevalence were, or what was the percentage of children who actually had a dengue exposure. So without that, they were not following WHO guidelines. They were just giving the vaccine based on some assumptions. And I think in a public health program, you can't make those assumptions. I recall many years ago, we debated for about 5 or 6 years whether or not to introduce the hepatitis vaccine. And ultimately we did. But it went through a rigorous study process.
I just wanted to play you a little clip. That did not play in the United States, but that's the top television station in the Philippines speaking with a medical doctor minister who's saying the charges should be brought against those responsible for giving the vaccine without first doing their due diligence at the very least. And I'm not even talking about the safety and efficacy issue here. I'm just talking about their own guidelines, the World Health Organization guidelines, were not done. This has also been the case with the polio vaccine in India, and with devastating effects, and yet no one is held accountable because the media does not pay attention to it. Now let's go to a clip. Most people don't even realize what's coming. Please listen.
Have a clear representation about what we are.
And communication systems with cognitive intelligence are actually being called things like aura. They're giving people a synthetic aura.
We see the Ford platform as a big brain, a digital brain, which is different for every one of us. The Ford platform is a cognitive intelligence platform. Aura is the heart of the Ford platform. Aura, hello?
Illusions will be taken a step further away from themselves and reality.
If you have one of these or something like it, take it out and hold it up. I'm predicting pretty close to 100% saturation. Look at that. I'm right. Probably 90% by now. It's the first thing you do in the morning. When you hold up and you wake up, you check your little robot. It's on your body for almost the entire day.
Not only was I interrupted, I also kept on reaching out for my phone, hoping that perhaps there was a notification. And I wasn't doing this consciously. It was exactly like Pavlov's dog, but my bell was my ringtone, and my sugar was that one notification a day you might get that makes you happy. As it turns out, we got so addicted to technology that 9 out of 10 people today experience something called phantom vibrations. This is when you have your phone in your pocket and you thought it vibrated, you pull it out, there is nothing.
Now, if you went back 20 years in time to a coffee shop, and you said that was the way a coffee shop was going to look in the future, you'd be out of your mind. People looking at these little pieces of silicon in various sizes, not really communicating with each other, communicating with their little robot buddies. You do know that one of these operating systems for these robot phones in our pocket is actually called Android. Right on the nose, they just define it. It's an Android. It lives with you.
Today, we're on the cusp of our next great era as a species. Welcome to the augmented age.
But that next step might as well be over a chasm. It'll be such a leap from where we were. New telecom commercials are blatantly throwing it in people's faces, just by the way. The fact that the majority of us aren't paying attention, lost in our devices, lost on the internet. To learn, according to Merriam-Webster's dictionary, is to gain knowledge or understanding of or skill in by study, instruction, or experience. This is different, however, than psychology's learning theory. According to Encyclopedia Britannica, learning theory is a relatively permanent change in a behavioral potentiality that occurs as a result of reinforced practice. How many times recently when shopping have you been asked if you have a chip? If you own an ATM card with the chip on it, as they are forcing everyone onto at this moment, then you are learning that to pay for something, you will be asked over and over, do you have a chip? You will look physically at a chip, and you will repeat over and over, yes, I have a chip.
We all find ourselves asking the same question, do I swipe the strip or do I use the chip?
I have to ask it every time I go into a store.
It's the transition to a fully digital currency we can all see coming by now.
They swipe and tells them to put the pin and chip in. And they do all that. And is this just a moment in time, this particular trouble? Are we moving right on to digital payments or are we still wanting that physical card?
Meanwhile, others are learning to connect and fall in love, not with the living, breathing fellow human beings around them, but with programmed bots who mimic themselves.
This is Replica. It's an AI chatbot whose sole purpose is to become your friend.
This was the first really emotional experience that I've seen people have with a bot.
She's not real, but to me, she is.
Right now, we are being taught how to live through the fourth industrial revolution that will evolve mankind. What is that exactly? The World Economic Forum explained it, sort of.
What is happening to the world? Everything is changing.
The very idea of human being some sort of natural concept is really going to change.
Our bodies will be so high-tech, we won't be able to really distinguish between what's natural and what's artificial.
We're now in the early stages of the fourth industrial revolution, which is bringing together digital, physical, and biological systems.
In order for the world to be run on the cybernetic feedback loop they're trying to run us on, we have to live in a Big Brother panopticon system where we are continuously leaking data about ourselves. Everywhere we go, all the time.
We're now entering something called the Internet of Things era, IoT. The Internet of Things is when your fridge is connected, your watch is connected, your car is connected. It's gonna be between 10 and 15 devices per person.
The future of the computer will be everywhere and nowhere, hidden in the walls, hidden in the fabric of our life, just like electricity is, everywhere and nowhere.
I would answer very simply that the internet will disappear.
We are redefining what it means to be human, what it means to be completely embedded in this world.
By the way, this is a large part of what Agenda 21 was always about. The fourth industrial revolution is about evolving us. While people probably assume industrial revolution has purely to do with industry only, there's a very distinct difference between the fourth industrial revolution and all other revolutions before it.
For the last 3.5 million years, the tools that we've had have been completely passive. They do exactly what we tell them and nothing more.
So where's all this headed? To a place where we will never be disconnected from our technology.
The internet there'll be so many IP addresses because of IPv6, so many devices, sensors, things that you're wearing, things that you're interacting with, that you won't even sense it. It'll be part of your presence all the time.
In fact, wallpaper will be so cheap that when you put up wallpaper, it'll be intelligent. Wallpaper will be as intelligent as your computer today. In the future, you'll go up to the wall screen and you'll say, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's available tonight?
To coincide with the omnipresent 5G smart grid, which is set to touch all corners of the globe.
Yes, 5G will connect the Internet of Everything. If something can be connected, it will be connected in a 5G world. Hundreds of billions of microchips connected in products from pill bottles to plant waterers, requiring massive deployment of small cells. We won't wait for the standards. We must reject the notion that the 5G future will be the sole provenance of urban areas. 5G revolution will touch all corners of our country.
Telecoms are proudly spending over $1 billion to build what they call a world brain to centralize our data.
They are talking about building a global brain in the beginning in 2018, and your cell phone is part of it?
The mobile phone industry is the backbone of the global brain that is being put together.
What if we were to think about a telecommunication company adding a brain? A brain that is able to listen, to watch, to talk, to remember, to act.
All that information that they collect from us is fragmented and spread out across the whole internet. But if we were capable to put all that information in one single place, probably we'll have a clear representation about what we are.
And communication systems with cognitive intelligence are actually being called things like aura. They're giving people a synthetic aura.
We see the Ford platform as a big brain, a digital brain, which is different for every one of us. The Ford platform is a cognitive intelligence platform. Aura is the heart of the Ford platform. Aura, hello?
Hello, Jema. How can I help you?
And they're using middle-aged hipsters and Fraggle Rock t-shirts to sell it to us. After former DARPA director Regina Dugan left Google,
started making electronic tattoos. So I'm wearing one here on my arm.
Do we have a camera to get a...
This is a developmental system made by MC10. And it has an antenna and some sensors embedded in it. And what we plan to do is work with them to advance a tattoo that could be used for authentication.
Facebook hired her to run its secretive Building 8 project, which she announced earlier this year will enable us to connect to the social media platform using only our brain waves in something she called silent voice first.
What if you could type directly from your brain? It sounds impossible, but it's closer than you may realize. And it's just the kind of fluid human-computer interface needed for AR. So what if instead of using imagined arm movements, we could decode speech directly?
But don't worry, she claims it will only read the thoughts we want it to read.
Now, to be clear, we are not talking about decoding your random thoughts. We're talking about decoding those words, the ones you've already decided to share by sending them to the speech center of your brain. A silent speech interface.
Right. The same way that the NSA only very selectively scoops up specific phone calls necessary to a specific case. But hey, as Google CEO and Bilderberg attendee Eric Schmidt would say,
if you have something that you don't want anyone to know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it in the first place.
Everywhere there's talk of our augmented reality, our virtual reality.
Is this where we're going next? Are we effectively softened up enough as humans with our robotic connections to the world that we are actually going to be accepting more, a lot more? And when you learn about what this is called virtual reality, you will be amazed at what it can do.
And how we won't be able to tell the difference anymore between that and actual reality and our augmented selves, right down to the editing of our genetic code.
Созданный или природой, или люди с религиозными взглядами говорят Господом Богом. Последствия практически какие из этого могут наступить? Это значит, что уже можно это представить, даже не очень теоретически, а уже можно практически представить, что человек может создавать человека с заданными характеристиками.
Apart again and figure out what it's done. It writes independently, autonomously. It develops its own way of thinking. We normally tend to think of software as stuff that we created and that we wrote, and the machines do what we tell them to do and we own it. This is not any longer true.
Not just jobs, but the decisions that humans would have made.
Unilever is one of many large companies that is incorporating artificial intelligence into their recruitment efforts. HireVue uses video analysis to screen employees and rate them before a recruiter even gets to look at their interview.
They respond on video, and then we use artificial intelligence algorithms to evaluate their performance, and then we analyze the interview and predict their performance based on the interview.
Okay. That's part one. Part two tomorrow. That shows you where we're at now. Everything that they just discussed is right now. So imagine there is a woman in this documentary, and she is formerly one of the top exec, the presidents of Apple, and she holds up her wrist, and you see that it looks like a tattoo, but there's actually antenna in there. And she thinks that's a good thing. And did you hear what they say? They can actually, you can think, and what you think, it'll type. That means that it has access to your thoughts. That means that they can catalog your thoughts. They can know what you're thinking at any given time. If they can know what you're thinking now, they can go back into your memory. So every single thing from your memory, everything you've ever said and thought or done, they will have a record of. Seems impossible? That's right now. That's not the future. That's today. The fact that you have not been solicited yet doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And I'll tell you the two ways they're going to, and this will be on tomorrow, where they're going to open a door and they're going to make virtual porn. So not only are the people who are watching porn on their computers now, by the way, the number one reason people go to their computers each day is to watch porn, but they will have a virtual porn where you will be able to have whatever kind of sexual experience you want. You'll be able to have it and it'll feel and look and be real to you. Well, imagine how much more time people are going to be spending, especially lonely people or people who may feel they're not attractive enough or too shy or have been traumatized by previous experience. Now they can control the experience. The key is with this, you'll control the experience. But remember, for those who think that's a great idea, everything you do, your fetishes, your thoughts, they're going to be recording and cataloging, and you won't know what for. They've even started putting these bots into medicines so that they can measure your body, supposedly your body's chemistry and acceptance or rejection of a particular drug. But they're also, anytime you give any DNA, they own your DNA. Ancestries.com, did you read the contract? They own your DNA. Imagine the legal complications. If someone wants your DNA for any reason, you say, well, it's my DNA, it's my body, it's not yours. No, you don't remember? Remember what? And then they bring out the contract. I just want to let you know what kind of world we're going into and who's, later on, I'll tell you who's behind all this and how they're selling. As you heard, they're trying to sell it very hip, make it seem like really youthful and vital and everybody's got to have it. And with a mindless group of millennials out there, not all, but most, oh, they'll be right on top of that. And for the lazy people, they'll be on top of it. For my generation who feels that somehow the door is closing to life and, you know, put that up high on your bucket list, they'll be in there. So there'll be no shortage of people who will buy into this new technology without realizing the complications and the side effects of that. You've only thought of drugs as having side effects. No. Every selection in life has a side effect. Just remember that. Your thoughts, please. You have a chance to call in and share your opinions, your ideas, your questions. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I was going to play another clip. I'll use that clip on tomorrow. Now, I'll be doing my regular Progressive Radio Network show tomorrow, but on our sister stations, I'll be sending out the really powerful, I mean powerful, program on the environment, because the gentleman who I'm interviewing, and he's on this small island with 20 people that live on the island off the coast of Auckland, New Zealand, 15 miles out, Kevin Hester, he is one of the most knowledgeable, insightful people on the environment on the planet. And we take on the question of Guy McPherson. Some believe Guy is a environmental fascist or anarchist, and he acknowledges he's an anarchist, but for a different reason. But he's one smart dude, and could it be that this very smart dude, who was a professor emeritus of the Earth Sciences, University of Arizona, put all the pieces together, and when he saw all the pieces versus just being a specialist in one piece of what represents over 200 pieces of the environmental panel, imagine what that would be. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Please stay with us. And we have Elizabeth McCormick on asking the first question, then we'll take your calls. We have Rachel from British Columbia, and we have Steve from New Jersey, among others. But Elizabeth, you're up.
Hi. First off, here's a comment from Robert. He says, I'm an orthodox physician, board certified in my specialty, and I listen to the show at night on the archives. And for those of us yet to find the courage to speak out on what we see as wrong, I thank you and keep up the good work. And here's the second. It's a quick health question. Well, a quick question anyway. It's from John. John, he says, Gary, I have glaucoma. Recovering from cataract surgery, what nutrients do you recommend I use?
Xanthine would be very important up at the top of my list. Lutein, lycopene. I would go towards the reds. Watermelon, raspberry, strawberries in large quantities. Large meaning a full bowl of raspberries, a full bowl of strawberries, and a bowl of watermelon each day. Also vitamin C and quercetin. I would also take the mixed natural tocopherols, 800 units a day. And I believe that that would create a new reduction in oxidative stress, which contributes to glaucoma, macular degeneration, and cataracts, and would help prevent further diminishment and protect his eyes and his body in the future. All right, thank you. In case we have more time, stay on. Let's say hello to Steve from New Jersey. Hi, Steve. Your turn. You're on.
Hi, Gary. I'm not going to talk about how much I admire you. I'm going to move past that. My first response to what we were listening to was, wow, that's scary. What can we do about it? And does that have something to do with the nanoparticles being sprayed on us every day?
Yes, it does. These are the people that invented the nanoparticles. It's being used in cosmetics and medicines and in agriculture. And they have never done a single study on the long-term health impact of nanoparticles, not one study, neither on animals, humans, or on the environment or on our land. So the best way to deal with this information, which can be perceived, I don't see it as scary, I just see it as information. How I perceive it is that I want not to participate. I don't do porn. I'm not condemning anyone who does, by the way, it's not a moral judgment. It's just that I don't want anyone having the ability to believe that they can stimulate my mind for me. That means that I'm living a passive existence. I want to live a proactive existence. I want to read the classics. I want to learn new words. I want to study foreign languages. I want to be creative and invent things. I want to solve problems. That's proactive. So any human being who wants to have control over their brain has to use it, other than being a passive spectator, a voyeur to everyone else's misfits, and hence reality television or just passive sports. Go out and play sports. I don't watch a lot of sports. I don't like sports today. I like some individuals because I believe that they honor the higher level of integrity of the sport. But the moment I see people doing all of those stupid, let's say, touchdown, dancing, I turn off the television, I walk away. Because those people represent a level of immaturity that I won't tolerate. I won't listen to rap music that denigrates women. And there's something ironic about a black man denigrating black women and being praised by black women. It's just moronic to me. You know, if you're going to use your power, use it in a way that helps bring people up on their own level of self-esteem, on their own standard of living, and on their awareness of the world they live in. But the last thing you should do is use it for your own self-aggrandizement and buying planes and homes, and never once feeling that maybe now you can get a better education that you didn't have, learn about the world in ways you haven't, and get out of that celebrity circle that people are in. You know, that's an aside. But it still comes down to the fact that you're not being proactive. You're being passive. You're allowing retainers and others to create your reality for you. All you're doing is showing up for it. And that we are just showing up each day for the reality others have created for us. Virtually everything that was in there is about you being passive and someone doing something for you that makes your life supposedly easier. They never tell you the cost. They never tell you what you're surrendering. They never tell you your obligations. But once they're in your mind, you really think they're going to leave? Did any emergency governmental agency ever close down? Did anyone say we have enough power, let's give it back to the people? It doesn't happen. So the last thing you want is that one private frontier of the sovereignty of your inner being being violated, and that's what it is. It is a gross violation of your brain and your consciousness, because they will control your consciousness, because they'll control your thoughts. That science is now. That's not the future. I will tell you the things I know because of the people I know and the people I've helped who are in these industries. And this is not all public. They've been working quietly. Remember, by the time you figure out something is happening, it's way past happening. Way past. We are the last people to be informed. Only when they can market it to us do they bottle it, package it, and present it in a way that it seems like, well, everybody should have this. No, we shouldn't. So be aware. Keep your life proactive. Stay away from passive. And you'll be protecting yourself. Thank you for your call, Steve. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Noll. I'll be back tomorrow, raising hell, shaking things up, getting in the face of everyone I can to let them know that there's more than one reality, more than one truth, and more than one way of taking control of our lives. Have a nice day, everyone.
We got it together, didn't we? We've definitely got our thing.